crazy porks who host this show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4. Pork therapy, scatly-dee-bop, shabba-dooey. You'll revel in hilarity. It's pork therapy.
Oh, I can't top that.
Oh.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Stephanie.
And this is Mike.
And you're listening to Pork Therapy.
And we thank you for it.
Absolutely. We are the podcast about voluntary relationships, right, Mike?
Yay.
We talk about relationships from a liberty-friendly, liberty-oriented perspective, and we are also heard on the Liberty Radio Network, and that was a lot of liberty.
if only we had that much in our real lives.
Yeah, that would be nice. yeah, we are heard on the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM. And of course, you can also check out our website, which is porctherapy.com. Of course, that's porktherapy.com. And go there, check out our blog, check out all of our old shows. You can leave us comments, you can contact us by email, and also get our phone number in case you want to leave us a voicemail. And we do take
credit cards.
Oh. Yes, we we take those too. In case you want to send some money our way, but
yeah, we do take.
We take listener questions and we talk about them.
If you want to ask us a question that you're having a dilemma with about any kind of relationship, you can email us at questions@porktherapy.com.
Absolutely. Or you can call us at 419-PT-LOVE-4.
Right.
Yeah.
You can find out all of that from our and more on our website, porktherapy.com, P-O-R-C.
Mm-hmm. P-O-R-C-therapy.com.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Okay.
So...
You're feeling a little slow tonight. I am feeling a little bit... We're like, there are these long pauses between our talking.
They can deal with a pause.
Yeah, I guess they can accept a pause. So what are we talking about?
This is yet another episode where we are not talking about a listener question. Although, perhaps there is a listener out there who has this question. I just didn't ask it. I think you
listen to the show, right, Mike?
Yes.
Sometimes.
This was my... It's not even a question. It's just something I want to talk about again. Ostracism.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, we've talked about it on many shows, and we might have even had a show or two based, you know, focused on this topic, right?
Right.
Okay.
We've had, I think, more than one show about this topic.
And I think my views have changed, and so I wanted to revisit it.
Okay.
So, first, what is ostracism?
What is it? Well, as I understand it, ostracism is... the act of removing yourself from association with a person or a group of people or a business or an entity, I guess, for ideological reasons. So the person or whatever is not trustworthy, or there's a problem with them, or you believe that they have wronged you somehow, they owe you restitution. All those could be reasons for ostracism. And as I understand ostracism, it also has the additional component of you make it public, you make it known that you're choosing not to associate with this person.
That's right. That's how I understand it. I don't think the reason you're ostracizing fits into the definition. It could be for a good reason or a bad. I don't think that's part of the definition.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what do you mean a good reason or a bad?
Maybe you're ostracizing them because their eyebrow is too long. You know?
But I see what you're saying.
That doesn't affect the definition. You're right. Yeah. It's not may or may not be a valid reason to ostracize, but that doesn't affect the definition.
Okay.
So to exclude from a group, right?
Uh-huh.
And
that's a dictionary definition.
That is one dictionary definition, and it kind of matches yours. You added that it should be public.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. Now, why should it be public?
So that other people are aware of the transgression, and also so that the perpetrator has a reason to, or an extra incentive to make good.
Okay. So then what is overall the purpose of ostracism? That you've kind of just said it, I guess.
The purpose of ostracism seems like it would be to motivate to somewhat coercively motivate the person.
Oh, I don't think it's coercive.
I think it's a little coercive.
How can it be coercive to
deny
your services, to not associate with someone?
Well, yes, on its face, it certainly is more voluntary than, say, assaulting them and throwing them in a jail cell or kidnapping them, right?
Yep.
It's more voluntary than that. But it's not as if you're talking to that person and making an empathetic connection with them and talking about what happened and connecting with them so that you'll form this bond and they'll voluntarily want to meet your needs that weren't met, as we would talk about in the framework of nonviolent communication, right? It's like, okay, I'm going to punish you by taking away my time, my services, the opportunity to do business with me or to be friends with me.
Right.
I'm going to punish you by taking something away from you that you enjoy instead of and hope to motivate you to change your behavior because I'm trying to get you to do something that I want you to do, rather than I'm forming some kind of relationship with you where...
Mutual good.
Yes.
Okay.
Where it's a win-win relationship and you will want to meet my needs because that's what we do for each other.
Okay. So, I would say that ostracism is not nonviolent communication, is not necessarily nonviolent communication. But it sounds to me like you might have changed your view on ostracism too then.
Yeah, a little bit. I think I have. I mean, I don't remember what number episode we talked about ostracism in the past, but I think it was way at the beginning of the show. And at that point, I wasn't really so enlightened or aware of some of the nonviolent communication ideas that we've been talking about recently. And I think now, just to sum it up, we can talk about this more on this episode, but I think more and more I'm seeing ostracism as an absolute last resort. And something that should be used very, very infrequently, if at all, maybe never even needs to be used, because people can work out their problems if they have the proper tool sets to do so. So, yeah, my views on ostracism have changed, and I see it as a lot more of a last resort than I used to.
Okay. Well, my views have changed, but just because I don't think it's effective, not because I don't think it's... Well, I guess that could be saying the same thing, really. It's not effective, but NVC is, like, that kind of thing. NVC is nonviolent communication.
Yeah, we got an email about that. What are you talking about, NVC? So, I'm sorry, Mike, go ahead. So can you explain a little bit more? Because when you said that usually we don't talk much about our topic before we start recording on Pork Therapy because we like the raw, unedited...
That's not true, though. We used to never talk, have a rule.
Yes.
But in the last 50 shows, we talk about it beforehand.
Yeah, we go over an overview, but for this particular topic,
we started talking.
Yeah, we started talking, and I had pretty much have no idea. We're kind of winging it. So can you explain a little bit more, Mike, about why you wanted to bring this topic up and what your experiences have been that led you to change this view?
Sure. One of the... in a free society... do we have to define that?
Yeah, let's define it. Sure.
We don't live in a free society.
No.
And as a matter of fact, I'm not sure if any human has ever lived in a free society. Government has always existed. You may think government is there, any given government, yours, you probably like yours. You may think government is there to protect you and to help you and when you're poor and whatever. But even if it does what you think is good, it does it with stolen money, taxation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's nothing that government does that isn't harmful. Even if it helps some people, it hurts more.
Yes, and usually they're not helping poor people. Even if they may have those intentions some of the time, often it's just that the stolen money doesn't go for good purposes, like maybe feeding people or helping people out when they're truly down on their luck, but it goes to military adventurism, imperialism, huge bloated bureaucracies of government employees.
No matter what you think government does or should do, even education, it does it poorly, it does it...
And it does it by force.
That's the key. Yeah. It does it by force. We're not free. You do not have a choice whether you pay for their kind of education or what they educate, etc. You don't have a choice to be ruled. You are ruled.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a free society. So,
and if anyone has a question about that, email us questions@porktherapy.com.
Absolutely.
We'll go into it more. But we're kind of assuming that everyone kind of has this background knowledge. Yeah.
So in a free society, I was under the belief for the past 2 to 5-ish years...
Mm-hmm.
that ostracism would play a huge role as a tool to help society self-correct, for wrongdoings, without a group of people with the monopoly on force, like cops, government judges, that kind of thing.
So it would meet people's demands for justice.
Yes, it would It would be a free market justice system.
Yeah.
Or it's an integral part of a free market justice system. Mm-hmm. Ostracism would be such that, or not such that. As an example, mm-hmm. if somebody does something that society, a free society considered wrong.
Such as murder.
Murder, steal a loaf of bread, whatever. Mm-hmm. Then
that's not equivalent to murder, but
I'm not saying no, equivalent. Yeah. I'm trying to cover the gamut.
I gotcha.
Whatever is considered wrong.
So I think we should back up. What would be considered wrong would be something that violates the non-aggression principle. So you know, you should act in such a way where you don't initiate force or fraud.
That's the best way to live. But mm-hmm. I don't think necessarily a society would even think that. A free society, mm-hmm. let's say they had to fight and struggle to get free, so they probably understand the non-aggression principle. Mm-hmm. 2, 5, 10 generations later, will they remember the non-aggression principle?
I hope so.
Well, maybe, but if they don't, it's almost irrelevant to this point, because if they're blinded by television and whatever at that point, and they've forgotten why their grandparents fought to be free or whatever.
Blinded by science.
Blinded by science!
Yes.
She blinded me with science. Science! Okay, if they've forgotten the non-aggression principle, and still, somebody does something that they consider to be wrong, even if it's aggression or not, you know?
Okay, so anything that they consider that a large enough number
of
people...
That's the key there.
...considers to be wrong.
Yes, a large enough portion of the society considers to be wrong, the idea is that they would ostracize this person. They would say, this is wrong, make good. And the person would say, no, I'm not going to make good, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they would say, well, I'm not selling you groceries. I'm not selling you gasoline.
Yep.
You're not welcome in my church, whatever. And then this person who did wrong by most of society suddenly doesn't have a society.
Yeah.
They can't really live. That's kind of the idea,
yeah.
Right?
If they do something bad enough to the point where...
Right, right. If you stole a loaf of bread and you're starving, probably not too many people would ostracize you.
Right.
That was the theory.
Right.
Or that is the theory, I guess.
I suppose so,
right.
Yeah.
If you murder someone in cold blood or pathologically or whatever, mm-hmm. not what is the word?
Sociopath?
Sociopathically. Pathically, that's it. If you murder someone, they will probably, a large portion of the people would be willing to ostracize you.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you think?
Well, I guess it depends. I mean, if you're really a sick individual and you're having a psychotic episode
Just for an example, let's uh-huh. say you are totally starving and through no fault of your own, you lost your job because an earthquake happened and the factory was destroyed, and you're starving and you steal a loaf of bread to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Versus you kill a nun, and then when you're caught red-handed, and you say, yeah, I did it, and I do it again.
And I liked it. Yeah.
So of those two examples, mm-hmm. which are totally ridiculous extremes,
yes.
probably most people in the society would not ostracize the guy who stole bread.
Mm-hmm.
They might want him to make restitution. Who knows?
Or they might offer him help.
They might.
Yeah.
However, most people in society would probably want to ostracize the murderer.
Mm-hmm. Or they also might offer the murderer help.
They might offer him help.
Yeah.
But
I think both of those people need help.
Sure they need help, and sure they both did wrong, and sure there are different circumstances, but I'm talking about ostracism.
No, you're right.
And a portion of the society.
Yes, I will accept
maybe,
your argument.
Maybe in a million people society.
I'm just being pain in the ass.
Oh my God. I'm going to ostracize your pain in the ass. Okay.
Right.
So...
That's, so the murderer would be more likely to get ostracized.
Yes, that is the theory.
Yeah.
And that is what I believe the past few years, that in a free society, this form of ostracism would play an integral role in non-violent, non-coercive mm-hmm. Justice.
Yep.
Okay. I have now lived in New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project for a while, mm-hmm. and part of the Liberty community for even longer,
uh-huh.
and I have seen and participated in ostracism on both sides, ostracizing people who have done wrong and been ostracized for claims, and I have wanted to ostracize other people for what I consider having done wrong.
Yep.
You know, no one murdered anyone. We're not talking that extreme. But with my experiences in the past few years, I've just come to think that, especially with the larger the group of people you talk about,
mm-hmm.
The mob is ruled by emotions. And ostracism is ineffective.
Mm-hmm. Can you be more specific?
Well, a long time ago, maybe almost 2 years ago, there was an incident in the Liberty community where there was someone who owned some horses was treating them...
Allegedly.
Was accused mm-hmm. of treating them poorly by another Liberty person who was working for her.
Yep.
And that the Liberty person who made this accusation, apparently, I don't know all the details, I wasn't there, but apparently called the cops in secret and had the cops come in and steal horses and computers and property and guns and whatever else, instead of trying to communicate and solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So force and government was involved from by a Liberty person.
Yeah, and I don't know, I have to say, if there may be some details missing.
Sure.
I don't know all the details of the story, too. I only know a very cursory
overview
of what happened.
I know a bit more than cursory, because shortly after it happened, I talked personally and privately with numbers of the individuals involved.
Okay.
And got their side. So I still do not know everything.
Right.
Nonetheless, when this happened, a huge number of Liberty people wanted to ostracize the person who called the cops.
Okay.
The person who aggressed.
Yep.
Because, but basically the result was the Liberty community was divided roughly 50-50. Half the people said, no, she did right. The horse was, you know, being hurt. And half the people said, yes, but the horse was property of this person and there was no aggression involved until this other person called the cops.
Mm-hmm.
So half the people said, you did wrong. We want to ostracize you.
Mm-hmm.
The other half said, no, we don't think you did wrong. You're still our friend. We're going to sell you groceries. We're going to sell you gasoline, etc.
Yep.
So the ostracism was, I would say, 100% ineffective.
Well, and also the people who are selling him groceries and gasoline are not in the Liberty community, mostly.
Well, that's true. Yeah, okay, so this is another reason, actually, why ostracism is ineffective.
Right.
Because while the Liberty community participating at that time was, you know, somewhat large for a Liberty community, maybe 200-300 people involved in this very particular incident, that's not enough people to, even if all 300 of those people ostracized him, that's really not enough people to make a difference in their life. They might suddenly be, let's say, expelled from the Liberty community, or not welcome enough to not actually participate, but they could still live. They could still not even have to move and live. They could still go to the grocer, who's not a Liberty person, and the who is therefore not ostracizing them, and still buy gas, and still go to the library, and whatever. So that's a good point. That's another reason why ostracism doesn't work.
Sure. So, okay, let me ask this question. If someone moves to New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project, and they're interested in being a part of the Liberty community, and then suddenly they become ostracized by that community, don't you think that would be a significant negative factor in their life?
It could be a negative factor.
I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
I
don't know if I believe this, but like I'm just thinking of this person who...
Well, I'll play devil's advocate to your devil's advocate.
Okay,
seriously.
Okay.
Let's say, yes, that is such a negative factor that it would affect someone. This person who did the aggressing never made restitution.
Okay.
So it didn't work.
Did they get asked for restitution? I mean,
I believe so.
And what was that restitution?
What was the request?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know for sure, but the person who owned the horses had to spend, I don't know, $40,000 to $60,000 for lawyers, and they served some time in jail, and I don't know what else. Oh, and their horses were taken from them, and they had to do without their business, because their business was horses for, I don't know, some weeks, something like that. So I presume the restitution was pay for my lawyer, pay for my lost business, something like that. I have no idea.
Okay. Well, I have to say, I'm a proponent of restitutive justice.
Yeah.
Whereas the goal in restoring justice in that situation is to make the victim whole. I mean, to determine if there is a victim, and if so, to make the victim whole, right? To replace what was taken from them.
Okay.
Or to give them some kind of compensation for the way in which they were harmed.
Okay.
So I don't think that ostracism necessarily is even always meant to restitute the victim.
I don't think it is meant to restitute the victim. I think it's meant to say, if you don't restitute the victim, we're going to do this.
Yeah, but also it often... For instance, I'm thinking of a dispute where there was allegedly one person who violently attacked another person.
Okay.
While they were both intoxicated.
Okay.
And the person who allegedly attacked the other one claimed not to remember anything afterwards, and the person who was attacked remembered everything and posted a very vivid account of it and so forth. And in that case, the person who allegedly attacked was essentially run out of town, and the person who was attacked never got any kind of compensation or restitution or anything like that.
Right.
It was just, but people were very quick to jump on the bandwagon of, let's ostracize this guy. He's an attacker. He's a rapist. He's a, you know, he's a jerk. And there was a lot of this name calling and a lot of that kind of mob mentality like you described. But I didn't see any push for restitution in there, and I would have liked to see that.
I would say that you just described two more reasons why ostracism isn't really effective.
Mm-hmm.
So one is that it doesn't restitute.
Mm-hmm.
It might be
an incentive to restitute.
Right, and not even a very good one as far as NVC is concerned.
Yeah.
So it might be an incentive to restitute. However, in your example, they didn't even seek that. They just sought to get rid of him, right?
Right.
Okay, so that's one reason why it didn't. It is ineffective.
Yeah.
And another exemplified also there is the passion.
Yeah.
You know, people are ruled by their emotions.
Yeah.
They might have reasoned enough to put together that this person aggressed and therefore should be ostracized and needs to go to get blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But no, not even more than that. Not like, oh, well, how will this help? And it's kind of, you know what? Ostracism, because it requires a large percentage of the population, is basically collective speak.
Mm.
Right? It's basically groupthink.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why it's ineffective.
Yeah, I don't like that aspect of it.
Yeah, I don't
have
at all.
Totally honest.
Yeah.
Like, because people, I think, have a tendency to not look at all the evidence, maybe, or not look at it very carefully. Or maybe some people who, you need numbers of people to participate in ostracism,
huge.
Right? For it to be.
You need large numbers and large percentages.
Right. So there are a few people who want to spend the time to look into every aspect of someone else's personal conflict and decide what they should do about it themselves if they're not involved, or maybe if they are involved, then they make up their mind and decide. But most people don't want to spend that time, I think.
I think that's right. And this will kind of lead me into a branch topic that's related, and that is reputation.
Mm-hmm.
How I think we've talked about reputation before, and I think I've even expressed how I think it's a faulty idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's related here. So here's another example from the Liberty community in New Hampshire where I think ostracism worked fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, there was a guy who stole from his roommates, a Liberty guy who stole from his roommates who are also Liberty activists.
Mm-hmm.
And they apparently...
Allegedly, right?
Well, okay, at this point in my discussion,
let's say
it's alleged.
Yeah. Okay.
Then these... Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just don't know.
Right.
I never bothered to look into that situation.
Okay. Then the roommates went through a lot of research. They went to local pawn shops to look for the stolen property, and then they looked into schedules of work to see if it was possible for a person to be... So they did a lot of research.
Yeah.
Then, when they were convinced, and I think it took like a month,
when
they were convinced that their roommate was the one who stole the money, they confronted him and said, give us some money back or let's make restitution, and he didn't. And then they went to a public forum, which happened to be an event at a Porkfest celebration that had a huge audience, and they publicly ostracized him.
Okay.
So, and then this person, very shortly thereafter, moved out of New Hampshire.
Right.
Did not make restitution, but left.
But left.
So it's not. It actually wasn't super effective because they did not get restituted.
Yeah. See, that's what that's what bugs me.
Yeah.
I want them to get their money or their property back.
Right.
I don't care if this creepazoid leaves because I wasn't friends with him in the first place. You know, him being here had no impact on my life.
So, I guess I shouldn't have brought that up because I brought it up as an example of ostracism that worked and it didn't really work.
Mm-hmm.
But where I was going with that example was reputation, and this is another failing of the ostracism system.
Mm-hmm.
You said not many people will want to put in that kind of effort like these guys did.
Yeah.
So what happens when you have a very passionate thing like, oh, they're harming horses, I'm going to take a side, is you know, most people will say, well, I'm not involved and I'm not going to spend a month doing research, but my friend Joe did, and I trust him.
Yeah.
And then what if Joe didn't? Or what if Joe's making it up because he's passionate about it?
Yeah. Or Joe just happens to be very popular.
Right.
Yeah.
And for that matter, what if Joe is exceptionally popular? What if Russell is exceptionally popular among the Liberty crowd?
Yeah.
And no one would believe he'd do a wrongdoing, and yet he does.
Right.
Then how does the ostracism, which side does the passionate groupthink take there?
Yeah.
The wrong one.
Yeah.
Or the invalid one, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another reason why I think ostracism is not the end-all be-all solution to justice in a free market society. And I used to.
You know, yeah, okay, Mike, I hear what you're saying, and I pretty much agree with every point that you've brought up. I mean, I think you're absolutely right on the money.
Okay.
I have some problems with ostracism, too. Although what I want to say here is that I think often the concept of ostracism or the portrayal of ostracism as a free market kind of alternative to coercive justice systems, injustice systems.
Right.
the portrayal of ostracism is just very hyperbolic. I mean, what people talk about is like, oh, well, if someone really does something egregious, like a murder or whatever, then if someone someone does something that violates the non-aggression principle, then they'll be run out of town. Nobody will sell them groceries. They won't be able to live. They'll be forced to make good. And, you know, and that's really that for all the reasons that we just discussed, that can't happen. That doesn't happen.
Right.
And often the reasons for ostracizing people, I mean, you know, for instance, racism could be a reason to ostracize people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, could you imagine a group of white people
ostracizing
redheads or black people in the South was what I was thinking of. And often that was enforced by law with the government. Jim Crow laws are a great example of that.
So,
but yeah, I mean, often ostracism is not as it's portrayed in books about liberty and voluntarism and stuff like that. What I think we can do with ostracism is think of it a little bit differently. And by that, I mean, try our best to get restitutive justice whenever possible. And I think to do that, we really have to use the techniques of nonviolent communication and actually connect with people and not see them as enemies, but see them as human beings and try to work out our conflicts before we resort to, oh, well, I'm just sick of that person. I'm not going to talk to them. I'm going to talk behind their back. I'm going to spread rumors about them and stuff like that. I think that we really got to try everything we can to work on it and get right for what was done wrong to us before cutting that person out of our lives. However, you can always, of course, choose the level that you want to associate with someone based on what you know about them. And that's kind of goes into reputation.
But you're talking, I think, about a personal interaction with, not an ostracism where you tell the group and you hope the group follows you. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that I completely agree with. I mean, there's people who I don't want to associate with and I won't, and I won't do business with them, but I'm not really going to tell the group or hope that the group follows me and also doesn't do business with them. I just don't want them.
Yeah, and I have a lot of people like that too, where I've, you know.
But also, by doing that, I'm not hoping to get restitution from that person. I just want them out of my life. It's almost the same thing, just on an individual level, not a group level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, sure. It's like a lot of times someone hasn't harmed you, but may have harmed someone else, or there might be allegations that they've harmed someone else, and you think to yourself, well, okay, I don't really feel like becoming close friends with that person, or I don't want to support their business or whatever.
Right.
And it's just, that's the end of it, right?
Yep.
And so subtle forms of ostracism, I think, go on in that way.
Because you're likely to tell your friends when it comes up, oh yeah, I'm not doing business with them because I don't like what they did over here. And then someone knows about it.
Yeah, or you could maybe never even tell anyone.
Well, I don't see how that's ostracism if you don't tell anyone. You're just...
Well, it still affects someone. Like, if maybe you would have become friends with someone or... Okay, I have an example. This is kind of funny.
All right. She laughs before the story.
it's a funny story. I don't think I want to tell this story, but I can tell you off the air. Never mind. I'm going to cut that part out. I'll tell you off the air. It's pretty funny.
Well,
I think you can decide, you know, maybe let's say you hear something about somebody. You hear that, I don't know, they don't wash their hands before they cook their agorist food in the kitchen or that their kitchen is dirty or something like that. Then, you know, you hear that and maybe you see some evidence of it and you're like, I'm not going to patronize their business. Right. Even if you don't tell people, it's still affecting them because you would have bought from their business otherwise, but you're not because you heard that thing or because that their kitchen was dirty.
I agree with you that it is affecting them on an individual basis. I don't agree that that's ostracism because by the most basic definition, it's exclusion from a group.
Mm-hmm.
And you're an individual, not a group.
Can it be a group of one?
I guess. That's not a group. A group of the cells in my brain. And also, you're not affecting them. I'm sorry, you are affecting them, but you're not getting restitution. If you happen to eat there and notice that you've got dirty food, you're not getting restitution.
Well,
so it's the same.
The example was that you didn't eat there, but you heard that their kitchen was bad, or you saw their kitchen was dirty without buying some food. In that case, you weren't harmed.
I agree that it is effective on a very small scale and probably very healthy in your individual life to not associate with people who you don't want to associate with, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if I would call it ostracism. I see how it's very related.
Right.
If it might even be ostracism.
Right.
Something you said a minute or two ago made me remember yet another reason why I think ostracism is ineffective. And it might actually be the same reason looked at from a different angle.
Yep.
And that is, and I have a specific example from my life. A person in the Liberty community recently broke their agreement with someone close to me, and their agreement was to pay for services rendered, you know, X dollars by X date.
Okay.
They did not do that. And, months later and conversations later, it was not really happening. They claimed, actually, that they were trying to pay via another means, but it was explicit in the original agreement that that means not be a method of payment.
Mm-hmm.
And also their months past their due date. Nonetheless, they broke their agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So, ostracism was not used. The person aggressed against did not want to use ostracism, tell the community. However, eventually, 2, 3, 4 people were told, personal friends were told, hey, these people did this to me, and I just wanted you to know.
Yep.
Then, at social events, unrelated social events, we all happen to be in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
The people who knew that the aggression took place, aggression in a light term. They didn't beat anyone up, but they broke their word.
Yep.
Okay. The people who knew...
Well, that's fraud, right?
Yeah, fraud.
Yep.
The people who knew that fraud had taken place were just as happy and social with the people as before.
Mm-hmm.
And so, who knows why? Maybe they felt awkward confronting them about an issue not involving them. Maybe they felt they weren't supposed to know, so they were pretending not to. Maybe they felt it was none of their business. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't help at all.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't help the ostracism. Now, this was not ostracism, because the person aggressed against did not tell the community and tell their personal friends, please don't associate with them.
Yeah.
But it made me realize that even if they did that, how many of them would feel too awkward? These people, I should use names because this is confusing even me.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say Bob and Alice were the people who committed fraud. How many friends of Bob and Alice, when learning that Bob and Alice didn't, broke their word, would cut off communication? Or for that matter, would go up to Bob and Alice and say, we heard this, you should go pay them. How many? I think a tiny percentage.
Probably
I think most of them are going to continue being friends, perhaps with some knowledge in the back of their head that Bob and Alice might commit fraud to them.
Mm-hmm.
But they'd still be friends. They'd still sell them groceries and trade and go to movies with them and whatever.
Well, or it might be kind of the first red flag that goes off in their mind.
It could be.
Or it might be a red flag about the person who, who told the story.
Yep.
Like, hey, Bob and Alice.
Another story from them.
Right. So... I don't know. It would largely depend on the situation, but I agree with you.
Hmm.
If that was me in my personal life, I would like to say that I would probably, if I heard a story like that, let's just make this simple. Charlie tells me that Bob and Alice have broken an agreement with Charlie.
Okay.
Next time I see Bob and Alice,
mm-hmm.
I would probably say, hey, there's some allegations floating out around that, you broke this agreement, and I just wanted you to know about it. I'm not sure if you heard about this before, but maybe you should go work that out with this person, with Charlie.
Well, that would be, I guess, an individual's portion of the work to make ostracism effective, right?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it would be a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And actually, in fact, this actually did happen. There was a... people may know if we say this, but I'm not going to name names. There was a very public, recent, I guess, thing in the Liberty community where somebody loaned someone else several thousand dollars, a sum of money, in order for that person to be able to get to New Hampshire. And the person who was loaned the money was slow in making payments back and wasn't... I guess they had never really set a firm date to pay the money back, but the person was not being responsive to emails and requests for payments and stuff like that, and was being very, very what the loaner considered slow to pay the money back. So the loaner made that public and put up a blog post about it, and very soon after, a lot of people knew about it and were aware of the situation. And I was one of the people who read that blog post. And when I would see the person who received the money, I would ask him about it. I would say, hey, you know, how's that going? Yeah. I didn't say, did you pay it back yet? But I would say stuff like, oh, hey, how are things going with you and this person who loaned the money? Did you guys get this worked out?
Hmm.
I'm kind of inquiring in like a supportive way, not saying, oh, you should pay it back, you're such a jerk, and not ostracizing that person, right, who is alleged to have had a bad debt.
Right, because that's not going to get restitution, and you're using it. Even
right.
If you use it, you use it as last resort.
Right.
Okay.
I just asked about it. And I don't know if my asking had any impact on his behavior, but I wasn't about to cut that person out of my life just because he had a bad debt with someone else. Now, I wouldn't have loaned that person money anyway, and I never have loaned that person money. But
interestingly enough, as a tangent, which is what we specialize in,
mm-hmm.
I've lent that person money numerous times and always been paid back.
Really?
Before and after that.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's
not thousands of dollars, but
mm-hmm.
hundreds.
Huh.
Yeah.
And anyway, were you paid back on time? And
always.
Did you make a...
Actually, not always. And the one time he was late, he made it up. He took it upon himself to pay me interest.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. So it doesn't have to do with ostracism or mm-hmm. this story. Just I found it interesting.
Hmm. So that's actually a very interesting tangent because... So were you aware of it when the whole blog post came out and alleging that this person owed all this money and all this...
Well, I knew about it before.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not do what you did and say, you know, how's it going with you and the person, or have you paid that loan back yet? I basically ignored it and pretended it was none of my business, which is mm-hmm. a failing of ostracism. I was a failing.
Which a lot of people do a lot of people do. And I admit I have done that in the past as well. It's only when I really started to think about it and kind of became more aware of those things that I would have even thought to say, you know, check
to
in.
Act
with,
on it.
Yeah,
right.
How's this conflict going? I hope you guys can work this out.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing.
Hmm. So I brought us on a tangent. Did I totally derail us too?
No, okay. I don't think so. I mean, can we maybe we can get onto a little bit different part of this conversation,
mm-hmm.
which is I have some ideas about alternatives to ostracism.
Okay.
Do you?
Which is also cool because ostracism is an alternative to the injustice system. Alternatives to alternatives. So go for it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think for one, as I mentioned before, I think thinking about ostracism in a different way is necessary. It's not this whole paradigm where, you know, someone does something that violates the non-aggression principle, and then suddenly there's perfect knowledge that gets disseminated to everyone else.
Right.
Everyone else unanimously forms an opinion
based on the same reasoning.
Based on the same logical, rational reasoning about whether this person deserves to be ostracized or not. And then they carry it out, and it's unanimous, and
mm-hmm.
the person is forced to either make good or die. You know, I mean, that's kind of a ridiculous scenario.
Yeah, but that's probably the hope of most people who hear, you know.
Well, that's how some people think about
yes.
it, because that sometimes is
how
it's portrayed.
Presented. Yep.
And, I mean, I don't blame people who portray it that way, because it seems like there's such a high bar to clear, because when people have grown up their whole lives in this statist injustice system, and they just think, they just cannot get out of this mindset that that's the only way to go. The only way to go is throwing people in cages and having government
and having innocent people pay for it.
And having innocent people pay for it,
against
victimizing the victim twice.
Ugh.
The victim never gets any restitution. It's a convoluted system. You have to hire expensive lawyers to even navigate it. And if you're accused, the burden is on you to prove your innocence.
Not to mention the maltreatment that is received in jails and prison.
Oh,
horrible.
Horribly, very inhumane, especially in the United States, which incarcerates...
A
higher percentage of...
And a higher population than any other country, including China, with
wow.
10 times the population? What is it? China's...
Yeah.
Anyway.
A billion people. And,
over a billion people to our 300 million.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess that's not 10 times, but...
It's three times.
Yeah, over three times the population, and we incarcerate a larger percentage and a larger...
Number. Wow, that's insane. And
we're a free country.
Ironically, people consider the U.S. to be much less draconian than China, but it's already caught up, and it's ahead, in fact, in some aspects. So where is it going with this? When people are in the status injustice system for their whole lives and cannot think outside of that paradigm, I think when people who believe in voluntarism and liberty are forced with talking to people about how would justice be attained in a free society, they kind of have a high bar to clear because people are just thinking, they're just so stuck in this mindset, like this throwing people in cages and having everybody else be forced to pay for it is the only way we could possibly have justice.
Or for that matter, they're indoctrinated to believe that it's working, that this is a justice system.
Yes.
And so when you present an alternative, they think, that's not what we have. That can't be justice.
Right. And so there's this temptation on the side of the voluntarists to give a perfect answer.
Yes.
To give an answer that seems like it'll work in every instance, and to, I guess, not to be pointing out the failings of the current system, but to give an answer that seems like it'll be a panacea for everything. And I think that's why ostracism tends to get portrayed in this light. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it'll be unanimous, it'll be perfect knowledge on the part of everyone,
right.
It works, it's effective, it'll get restitution, when in reality that may not be the case.
Right.
So I think we have to think of ostracism a little bit differently. You can ostracize someone from your personal life. You can decide not to be friends with them, not to do business with them, or not to... You know, maybe you would decide to associate with them, but wouldn't decide to loan them money or
right.
something like that. You can kind of pick and choose how you want to deal with people based on their reputation. However, I think even looking at it that way is maybe even the wrong way to go about it. I think really what we should be doing as an alternative to ostracism is focusing on getting our problems worked out and getting these kinds of things out in the open, talking about them honestly, and discussing needs that were not met
mm-hmm.
in a very heartfelt way, and trying to connect with other people, because most people are not crazy, deranged serial killers, murderers who are going around on killing sprees. I mean, society would not work and would not function. And the current status justicism the current status justice system would not be able to stop those people if they were running amok in society right now. So most people are at least rational enough that you can connect with them on an intellectual level, and that you can connect with them on an empathetic level, right? That you can, I think, at least reach a solution where people the parties involved in a conflict understand where each other are coming from and can reach a solution. And if not, there are people that can help with this. We actually did an episode a while ago on mediation with mm-hmm. Mike Ruff. Remember that? So we discussed mediation and some of the techniques that Ruff uses to mediate conflicts. And using the services of people like this, who often do it at very, very, very reasonable costs. I mean, it's
well, even if it's not a reasonable cost.
Or for free.
If it'll be reasonable. But even if it's expensive... think of the cost if you don't.
Yes.
And we're talking about opportunity cost.
You can't afford
again.
Not to.
You're right.
Yeah.
What happens if you don't get it settled? Well, maybe they go to jail and you never get your money back. You've lost even more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whatever. That's an example.
Yeah. So people have incentives to work out conflicts on their own, and they have incentives to call in maybe the help of a professional if they're unable to resolve conflicts on their own. And I think that should really be the focus that we're emphasizing as an alternative to ostracism, as opposed to just advocating ostracism and trash-talking people and cutting them out of your life and, you know, ending relationships at the drop of a hat as a solution to problems. What do you think about that, Mike?
I completely agree.
Really?
Yep.
So you would favor maybe mediation or trying to work out conflicts yourself?
At the moment, yeah. I completely agree. Mm-hmm. Again, I used to think ostracism was the answer the way you're talking about.
Wow.
And then I grew up,
yeah.
You know, I experienced it and experienced its failures. And now I think, you know, it's not an answer. And it might have a positive effect in certain circumstances as a last resort,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the panacea to justice. And maybe mediation is, maybe arbitration, maybe better communication in the first place or throughout the process.
Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly that will help.
Mm-hmm.
Nonviolent communication might be the answer. I don't know. I would also like to address something that you said a while ago, and that is we need to look at... Oh, you said a number of the people in the Liberty community feel a need to present ostracism in this perfect light because they're trying to overcome someone indoctrinated into statism, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I would like to suggest that another way to look at answering those kinds of questions or you know, conversations...
Mm-hmm.
I recently reread an essay called I, Pencil by Leonard Reed, and we'll link to it in the show notes.
Yep, I've read that.
And that is a, you know, it's a short essay, but it's
very famous.
Yeah, very famous. And it's, epitomizes the, the way that we should be looking at those we as Liberty people should be looking at those discussions. And that is, I don't know the answer, but that doesn't mean that freedom can't exist. Now it,
and I don't know the answer, but that doesn't mean we should use force.
Right, right. Now it does it in a much more eloquent, you know, and much more exact, you know. It, I don't even know what to say, what I'm talking about. The essay states it much more clearly than me, and much more eloquently, and it's in much more detail than I just said it.
Right.
But it basically summarized is, iPencil says, you know, tells you. You don't have to know how liberty works to know that it works.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way we can look at those challenges. When someone says, oh, yeah, well, we have to have government. Don't you want roads? How would poor people get educated?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I don't know how they'd get educated. I might have an idea.
They might be educated many different ways.
Right,
yeah.
I don't know how, but that doesn't mean they won't be educated if there weren't force.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of answer we need to be thinking about.
Yeah, and just for people who aren't familiar, a quick recap. The reason why this essay is called iPencil is because it's describing how a pencil gets made. And they go, it starts off describing that.
From the first person of a pencil.
Yes.
Okay.
And so, you know, they have to get the rubber for the eraser. So they start off with these trees in like a South American jungle, and they're tapping the rubber and, you know, getting the dye to make it pink. And
the sequoia wood from Northern California, and the graphite and the lead from rocks in China.
Yeah.
And then they have to bring those via train and rail, and who makes the rails, and who pays the engineers, and who feeds them, and you have to put them on boats to get them to the factory, and who built the factory, and how do you build the gear, and millions of people are involved in making a pencil, something as simple as a pencil.
That costs 10 cents in the end.
Right. And that is made and presented for less cost than it takes the government to deliver a letter across the street.
Yeah.
And not a single one of those people on their own could make that pencil. And not almost, probably none of those people involved want the pencil. They're doing other things. They say, you know what, I know how to break this rock out of the hill.
Right.
And I will do that for you if you give me $10. And another guy says, here's $10 because I don't know how to do that, but I know how to take that rock and crush it into graphite or whatever.
Right.
I know, I don't know the pieces, but it's just such an awesome, beautiful essay. I love it.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's why it's been so popular for such a long time. I think it was written when, in like 1950s? Yeah.
58.
Oh, wow. We were right on that.
Yeah.
So,
thank you, Internet.
We love Wikipedia, yeah. Well, I mean, Wikipedia is another example of this, right?
Yes.
Nobody has all the knowledge in the world, but if you go to Wikipedia, it's like a textbook of life and all this stuff
this
that's
is,
known.
You know, it's like...
Or even the Internet itself. It's like distributed knowledge coming together in this cloud of... it's just awesome.
The Wikipedia might be a slightly better example because it's got an infrastructure that allows the population at large to... enter information and to self-correct, to correct others' information. So it's just kind of like self-shaping into a pretty darn reliable source of information.
Yeah,
it's great.
I agree. Cool. Okay, well, is this all we want to say about this topic?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so too. Thanks for listening to our show. We've been Pork Therapy all along, and we still are Pork Therapy. And if you go to our website, which is porctherapy.com, you can... listen to all our past shows, including the one on ostracism, which
That's right.
I'm curious to go back and listen and see how our views have changed on that. And
you can also listen to our past shows and leave comments about the shows and rate the shows. Hey, did you like it? Give it 5 stars.
Exactly. Yeah, I like that little feature.
You can click a button to call us, email us, find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, all kinds of stuff.
Yep. And we would love to hear from you, so please send us an email with your relationship questions about any kind of relationship. And we will talk about them from a liberty perspective. And our email address is questions@porktherapy.com.
And our phone number is 419-PT-LOVE-4.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Okay, so thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
They're two crazy porks who host a show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench. Because Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork Therapy. Advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention? mention. You can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more. At 419-PT-LOVE-4.